In the middle of the night, I go walking in my sleep, through the desert of the truth, to the river so deep. We all end in the ocean, we all start in the streams. We're all carried along by the river of dreams. In the middle of the night,
listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO radio station is located in Portland, Oregon, in Multnomah County. We honor the indigenous people whose traditional and ancestral homelands we stand on, the Multnomah, Kathlamet, Clackamas, Tumwater, Wallala bands of the Chinook, the Tualatin, Kalapuya, and many other indigenous nations of the Willamette and Columbia River regions. It is important to acknowledge the ancestors of this land and to recognize that we are here because of the sacrifices forced upon them. In remembering these communities, we honor their legacy, their lives, and their descendants with the forming of relationship to each other and the living world. We establish and support harmony within ourselves and set the stage for practice.
Makes you such a threat. We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power.
Joshua.
Wastelo, Tayan Wachianke, Chante Waste na Pechi Zapielo, Le Chante Itaha Owogalake, Le Unkipiki He Wastelo. Greetings and good day and welcome, my relatives. I shake your hands with a good heart. And as we voice from the heart, it's good for all of us to be here. You're listening to First Voices Radio and Teokasin Ghost Tour, sending you greetings and strength from the highlands of the Esopus, or the so called Catskill Mountains, in the lands of the Munsee speaking Lenape. This is an all-Native-hosted, all-Native-produced First Voices Radio, and Liz Hill produces First Voices Radio. You can now hear us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Buzzsprout, Spotify, as well as firstvoicesindigenousradio.org for archive, downloading, and listening. So I'd like to welcome you all here. I have three guests in studio, some surprises here. We had originally some guests that were going to be here, but they cannot make it. But we have some mainstays here, and that's good. We have Christian Matute Sagbe. His brother Michael, and we also have Lucas Jatoba. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about each of them as we go along, but I'm going to start with Lucas Jatoba, who is a photographer and filmmaker who was born in Manaus, northern Brazil. He's been living in Rio de Janeiro since 2014, where he studied anthropology, and he started working as a freelancer, professional, and volunteer documentation works on topics related to human rights, especially issues related to urban social issues. He's also the co-founder of Tropi Climb. So that's Lucas. And we have Christian Matute Sagbai, incarnated on a land currently referred to as Gualaquio, okay, Ecuador. Not too long ago, it was Quechua Canary territory, and I'll add, it still is. How's that? This recognition of land and language has drawn Christian to do the work of language justice. He's currently exploring this avenue of healing while keeping in mind the need for future generations to decolonize themselves through expansive and yet collective, connective land-based principles. And I'd like to welcome all three of you gentlemen here. And would you introduce your brother?
Yes, thank you. This is, to my left, we have Mike Matute Sagbai. Also just went to a school in SUNY Cortland, and just doing some training communications there as well, and now is currently just exploring what that is in the area after school and in our current world now. So we have him here. Thank you so much for being here, Mike.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for having me once again. As my brother mentioned, I was going to school for communications at SUNY Cortland upstate. It was an interesting journey, but really excited to be here.
Oh, thank you for coming to First Voices. And we like to start off our traditional circle here. And would you do us honors, Christian?
Yes. So we're going to take just right now really a moment to connect ourselves to the elements. And we do this through the water. We have some water in front of us. Really just taking the moment to feel the water inside us. Let this resonate and feel how the blood in our body is like the rivers and like the waters of the earth. So just with this, just saying thank you and recognizing that. Peace.
That water makes it all much better.
Oh, so fluid.
Wow. So, yeah, I had Christian and Lucas on a couple months ago, and in time we had Jonathan and Capiolani on, and Michael, it's your first time. We have Christian back and Lucas, and we covered a lot of subjects. We didn't really stick to one because we kind of weave here. And tonight I was thinking, what can I start this off with? And you know, a lot of these ideas don't come from me reading books, or if they all come as they're floating in the air, come from the land. And I was thinking, wow, there's a lot of farms here, there's a lot of fences here, there's a lot of roads here, there's a lot of, to me, it's ownership, a lot of disconnection because of that. And I was thinking about, okay, what am I? What's the quality of relationship with nature that I have as a native person from South Dakota to here? Would it be the same if my people were in another land and in another country, another hemisphere, basically, and not indigenous to the Western Hemisphere? And so this is what I'm... You know, if you know what I'm talking about, it's almost like we are encoded with this DNA to really feel the land. Because, I often go with the land remembers us, but are we forgetting the land? In other words, Mother Earth has always treated us indigenously, but are we capable yet of treating the land indigenously?
Thank you. That's very, very, very resonating right now, more so than ever. I think the way that the earth is speaking to me right now is really to look at the generational patterns that I grew up with. Within the last, specifically right now, I would say my mom and my dad's generation, and then that of, you know, her time. And seeing how coming from Ecuador to now coming here, there has been a major world change of view, a culture that many of it has been lost. Recently, my mom just came back from Ecuador, and she was just filling me in some of the practices for, like, letting go of the old and coming into the new, and this new year. How they did that, but how much we don't really do that here anymore, at all, actually. And so, I think for how the land for me, how it's like reminding me to go back into those practices is once again by looking at those generational patterns and how, because now I have offspring, we have a 4-year-old and a new one coming in. How like I can break those old patterns that no longer serve us, that I feel were embedded in us within the last, I would say, within the colonization of this area, what that is now known as Americas, but that was not too long ago known as Abya Yala by the Kuna people. This not even separated north to South America, but it was just that one land. And I think I like to say that's still present by me acknowledging that. But obviously, this is comes from those that never lost that connection, you know, that linear connection. So. How I'm brought back is by looking at some of these terms in the linear aspect, looking at it through the words, you know, looking at certain words that we're using, and how they really affect our perception in this life, how we carry out each other's perception, our relating to each other, but more so, once again, to the way that the earth is speaking. And so one easy way to do that is through composting. I'm gonna take a pause here, but I'm gonna leave that for now. Hopefully, we can get back into that and how composting can be a major way emotionally, psychologically, and but also physically, we can get in connection to the earth again.
No, thank you for that, Christian. Michael or Lucas, any thoughts about?
Primeiro, boa noite, Christian. Boa noite, Tio. Boa noite, Michael. Thanks for being here again. So. This is Lucas speaking. I was wondering, and just in my mind while you were introducing the topic, how we didn't think of that, but at the same time it that topic comes in like naturally aligned with the other two topics that we discussed, like the last time or the first time, and also on the second time too with Capilani. And looking at my personal history, the first time I was here with you, Tio, we and also Christian, we were talking about displacement, and I was thinking how I grew up in the city. So I was born in Manaus, which is in the middle of the Amazon, and I left when I was a baby to live in a major city, and I lived in big cities all my life. And then when I was a teenager, I got back to Manaus. I got back to this huge city, which is in the middle of the Amazon, and I started having that contact with nature, which was a contact that I was kind of kept away from. So I didn't have to experience that. And then later in my life, I started rock climbing, and that started bringing me more and more to nature and to understanding natural phenomena that I didn't. So, and that detachment, that feeling of displacement is also what we are brought to by our culture of being, and that brings me to the topic that we talked on our last meeting here with Capiolani, that that code, that we have that idea that the human culture is detached from nature, so everything that we create is a part of nature. It's not within nature. It's something else. It's something that we created with. So we are bigger than nature, and we brag ourselves or being greater than nature. So everything we do is better. Like, it's better from... but now we see a lot of stuff that's happening, like with environmental changes and things that we simply don't understand. And people keep thinking, what can we do? And I think it relates a lot with what you're talking about, too, about can we indigenously treat nature? That's a first thought.
No, yeah, it's very interesting on both, you know, experiences of how land really relates to you guys. You know, for me, like, how land really resonates me to come back to my roots is how I'm interpreting the question. Coming from school, you know, I went to a predominantly white institution. It was kind of funny how most of us on campus, people of color, whether you were Black or Hispanic, Latino, etc., like, most people there ended up knowing each other. That's just how it worked out at college, you know. And, you know, it was crazy because I kind of grew up in an environment where it was predominantly white. So it didn't seem too different for me going to college. But what really brought me back to my roots was that longing of wanting to, like, you know, go back to my roots, you know, and not just, oh, you know, where I was born with my family here in the States, like, back in Ecuador. Like, it was weird because growing up, I had the chance to visit Ecuador, and being born here in the U.S., I felt like there was a disconnect between my culture of origin and where I'm being raised. And it was especially, like, significant growing up around two older brothers, you know, my older brother here, who were born in Ecuador, and then me being born here in the States, being first gen, and then just trying to understand that dynamic. You know, I could never understand how their world changed coming from a different culture, but being raised in this culture with two different mentalities in mind, like, you know, and then going off to college, like, the biggest thing that called me out was, like, the land was, like, saying, like, all right, go back to your roots. Like, I see, like, the land to me was kind of saying, like, I see you're trying to fit in, this and that, but are you really being your true, genuine self? And I saw answers for that question, like, randomly. Like, there has been a couple times with some friends. Cortland actually has reservations around town that are really, like, known for Native and Indigenous communities. I'm not too sure about too many of them, but I have heard about many times. The closest I got to interacting with any of that culture was there was this, like, trail about a 10-minute drive from campus. It's called Lime Hollow. It was known to have Indigenous roots. And even throughout the trails, you see totems, you see small aspects. And it's almost like a reserve, like a mini reserve type thing. It's just like path and stuff. But it was, I had like a weird calling one day that I just wanted to go on a walk. And, you know, for people who are close to me, no, that's not really me. Like, I don't just go out of the blue, like, all right, let me go on a walk. But there was some weird sentiment or feeling. I was going through stuff, you know, both depressed at school, dealing with other things, and I just felt like I needed to get out, you know. I didn't really feel comfortable reaching out to family, friends, nobody, but there was just weird connection to wanting to reconnect to nature. And when I went on that walk, like, I just had questions answered. I felt like I was being pulled in. Like, it didn't felt like it was necessarily my Indigenous culture back in Ecuador, but just the reverence of, you know, being around sacred land and having that respect, and also acknowledging that, like, you know, this land isn't necessarily ours. It wasn't theirs. It's the earth's, you know, learning about that cohabitance, coexistence. So just, you know, just something as simple as going on that walk by myself, you know. And I didn't really know any of the trails, no nothing. I ended up actually at a beautiful pond with a whole scenery. Like, it felt surreal. Like, I felt like I was tripping or something. Like, but it was just genuinely just me out in nature on a walk by myself on a sunny day. Like, it was supposed to rain that day. So it was kind of funny how none of, like, what I expected to happen happened. And, you know, I just got a completely different answer and outlook. And after the simple walk, like, I just felt like, damn, like, I want to get to know about my roots, you know. Like, I'm here walking on land that many others, generations before me, have walked on, and, you know, they still exist to this day. And so I want to know about mine. And, you know, small experiences here and there eventually, you know, in school led me to learn more about my culture. I joined a fraternity Phi Iota Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. We're the oldest Latino fraternity in existence, and it was funny how through there I actually got a chance to learn a lot more about my culture's history and other both Central and South American history, which I was never taught in school. So it was funny how just a simple walk could lead to this domino effect.
No, that's a good description. You're listening to First Voices Radio. We have Michael and Lucas and Christian in studio. We're talking about, you know, our relationship to land, the value that we see or what's been displaced, and we're talking actually cultural etymology. We're digging down deep now because Earth needs us, is what I say. Mm-hmm. And Michael, I'm going to piggyback off of you. I remember when this program, First Voices Radio, was in the area of the Northwest and Seattle area, that some people from Mexico came up. One was from someplace in Colombia, I think, and they came up to a powwow in Vancouver, British Columbia, and they came and they were so surprised by what was going on. And first time they've seen this many natives in one place, and they just got sad. But it was after they said, "I'm indigenous too, I'm native too." You know, how much of this did I feel that sadness, and yet I had to come away from my land to another place to see the indigenous peoples where I come from. So I just wanted to piggyback off of that. And you reminded me that, you know, we tend to sophisticate because that's part of the colonization. We don't keep it simple anymore. We often sophisticate why we're here. It's almost like we're coming up with some kind of alibi, you see, some psychological alibi that because we're displaced, we missed this much of us, were fragmented. But when you said you went and the lake basically called you, you had some familiarity, because that blood, to me, without going to being too nominal about everything, is that blood to me is the DNA in the Western Hemisphere that goes from Alaska to Tierra del Fuego, right down there in Chile, right? So I'm thinking about all this stuff and how much we don't even acknowledge of ourselves as Native people from the Western Hemisphere. We tend to want to make excuses like we're from Europe or something.
Yeah. You know? And just to add on, like, I know I mentioned I got like a calling, like, that's different for everybody. For me specifically, it was like a weird desire, like, I want to go outside, like, I just want to be in nature. I don't know if you guys ever get that, like, you could be in your work day or whatever, you know, your routine, but there's just moments where it's like, I need a breath of fresh air. And that's all it really started as. And for me, I knew it was more than that, because as soon as I said I got to that, like, lake, I walked up and I felt like I had just found something. And, you know, like, and I, you know, I had always been a little skeptical about meditation practices. Luckily, I have my brother here who've introduced it many times. And, you know, I just kind of said, you know, screw it. Like, let me just try some, you know, I don't usually do. I had tried meditation on my own, you know, small times here and there. It worked out for a bit, but then I kind of lost practice of that. And for whatever reason, it was just that moment that was just like in front of the lake. It's like, all right, I want to start meditating. Started off with a couple deep breaths. And for me, it was what was affirming to me that I was like, oh, you're supposed to be here. At one point, I just looked out like across the water, across the lake. And there was like one specific tree that really felt like it was looking back at me. And it's hard to explain that feeling, but like you just saw like all these trees, and there was just, for whatever reason, like right across from me, all the way across the water, it was like one tree that had like, it looked bright green compared to all the others. And it almost looked like it had two eyes that were just like looking back at me. And then like, but what was weird was like, I felt like there was another presence there, but I didn't feel alarmed or scared. And at one point the wind started to pick up, and I almost felt like I remember asking, like, is it okay for me to be here? Like, you know, in my mind I was like, I'm probably talking to nobody. But then a gust of wind picked up, and I almost felt like a hand just like settle on like my left shoulder, you know, as if kind of to be like, you're good, like, don't worry. Yeah. And so to me, that was the moment that I was like, all right, I'm meant to be here.
So
right,
that's
now
reality you're talking about. That's reality to a lot of us. We're not gonna go, oh, we're dreaming. Yes, no, it's real. It happens. That's, and that's mm-hmm. that's intuition, I'd call it.
Yeah. Yes, instead of like calling it weird, I would call it like the intuition. There's something there that is not going through the linear mind, but it's transcending that. And I'm so glad you felt that calling. Mm.
Yeah. But it's interesting to think where that weirdness comes from. Why did you felt weird? you know, because when you look at the common sense of how Western societies think about indigenous people in general, they look at all indigenous people as being primitive. So, and what's like being primitive? Primitive comes from primal, from that initial feeling of something. So that is an initial response. So it's like being impulsive and the one that reacts upon its instinct, and that view is like if you're looking to someone that is stranded on an island and just has to survive and don't know well what it's doing. It's just being there and trying to keep himself alive, but that's not it. And just nowadays, like in the past decades, that archaeology and also anthropology started acknowledging that indigenous people were not only the native people, they were not only living in nature, they were also managing nature. And I was telling that to you, how nowadays people realize that the native people in the Amazon, they were not only living in the forest, they were growing the forest.
Yeah.
They were managing the forest in a way that was keeping the forest alive so it could keep them alive too. Mm-hmm. So, and they were working together in a bond to make it grow. So when you think of that detachment that culture does of what's human, what's nature, that's always going to be particularly more violent for native people, because and to indigenous people from the whole world that still live like that, and suddenly they are taken off of their lands and of that relationship, because it's a deep relationship. It's the relationship, like you were saying, of feeling like you're part of something, that you were invited to that experience. Mm. And it's like taking you a part of that and throwing you in an existence that's not yours, that it's totally a part of that.
That's interesting. Yeah. I go back to tongue-in-cheek thought is that, okay, many indigenous peoples' birthing or creation stories are very soft, come in very soft. And then we run into one in the Western that say, the Big Bang.
Explosion.
Right? So it starts right there, like, whoa, trauma right there, you know? So I'm thinking about this, and it's a good thing to talk about this. You talked about the Black Earth that the people in Amazon still do, as far as I'm concerned, and that's, we have to, again, remember our present phobic language that we speak right now, because we always refer to ourselves as was, and that we are here, we're here. Yeah. And maybe not like we were, but we are who we are now. And that separation is showing up. And I want to say that I know, like, from this land, the buffalo, the bison, right? They, if you put them back on the land, the plant diversity doubles and comes back. Mm. It's the same thing as Black Earth in the Amazon. So I think even our voices here as indigenous folks in the Western Hemisphere does that, even if it's on the airwaves. I'm sure the trees hear us.
Yeah.
The lake hears us. You saw the tree. Something different showed up. And that's reality to me.
Yeah.
No, yeah, and I guess, like when I say weird, like, you know, because like I was saying, growing up, I had two different cultures to keep in mind, like even an Ecuadorian culture or just, you know, Latinx type practice, like people be like, oh, the evil eye, you know, just something as that, like I always use that example just to be like, oh, like, you know, lead into spiritual things or other things, you know, that our indigenous roots, you know, like used to believe in. And so like having like those two contrasts for me, you know, in that moment, like I said weird, but it was just more of like it was different, you know, like it was just a different sensation, like experience, like yeah, there's like the part of me that's like challenging, like, all right, am I actually like feeling like the lake is speaking to me, or it, like, you know, and then there's the part of me that's like, no, like everything, you know, everything has soul, like, you know, everything mm-hmm. speaks to us, the ground, the earth, nature, like, so it was like, yeah, just weird. It's just more of like different, okay, not cool. necessarily bad.
We're going to come back and catch the thoughts with you, Christian, Lucas, and Michael here in the studio with First Voices Radio. My name is Teal Kazan, Ghost Tours. We'll hold these thoughts of what we were saying, talking about the reality that we live within. right, that's Voi Voi May by Marie Bowen from the Sami land up in Sweden and Norway and those areas up in the circumpolar Arctic. In the Hand of the Night is the name of that one. I think that one is called Butterfly, I think, in translation. But this is First Voices Radio. My name is Teokasin Ghost Horse, and I'm sitting in place with, I'm going to correct myself, Mike Sagbe and Kristen Sagbe and Lucas Jatoba from Brazil, from Ecuador, and as you said, Mike, born in the United States. You know, you cannot fathom where your different experiences for your older brother here, Christian, as to where Lucas was born. Even myself, as an older generation, you know, born in the United States, and yet it's the United States that we don't know. Mm. It's the America that wasn't here before 1492. So how much of that has been the colonial cloak that we've donned, that we've worn in order to get to withstand the cold and the starving and all the things that seem to be tragic. But the thing is, we are still here. Mm. We carried that blood, that DNA, that ancestry with us. We may have forgotten our languages, but the land has not forgotten us. And this scientifically can be proven. People understand this more when they really study what they're forced to study. You know, you speak English better because you were forced to speak it, right? So you get to know the innuendos and just everything from the regionalisms and the accents and everything. But you get into the etymology of why they manipulate. So it's a lot of... For me, speaking English is a lot of conflict and antagonism within how we speak it, because we're always trying to prove that we're right. And that's meted out in education. We take the test to say that we're upgraded, we're good enough, we're mm-hmm. intelligent enough. Mm-hmm. But little needless to say, you know, we're talking about Abya Ayala, mm-hmm. the whole of the Western Hemisphere, and letting go of the colonialism is what I'm saying, is that how long do we have to carry around the colonialisms and in even the terminologies?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, just what Mike had said earlier really had me pondering in connecting to what Teokasin is bringing forth and offering here, looking at the quality of our connection to the earth versus like the quantity or any other form like that that has to be of a like supreme or getting on top of competition or all these ways of exploiting, you know. It does go beyond the physical. It does root at the psychological and at the heart of the spiritual part that we've been ripped apart from. And so what has been trying to be forgotten for so long, for this many hundreds of years, can't truly be taken away, because as you've mentioned and referenced, and as we know, in our indigenous blood, our DNA, it goes way beyond these 1492 or any date that the United States or Americas have been established or referenced for us to try to deal with. And so part of that, I think that the quality does come and is shown by what Mike has shared here about that, you know, being born from a separate culture, but coming and having this calling, this intuition as to connect with, that can't be taken away. That's something that can't necessarily be erased. And so how do we, differentiate the quality of that is maybe by how much we listen to that intuition, how much we are led to back into that place, and what practices that may feel weird at times in reference to the current culture or lack thereof. So how much do we listen to that? What steps do we take? And how do we relate to ourselves eventually, to ourselves meaning including the earth, including her more and more in our daily lives, when we wake up and just feeling appreciation, for example. You know, like that's the most step, and it all stems from within. You know, there's something that is harder for them to take out without us willingly giving it away. And so I basically, my message right now is just that of like the power that we have within us still, as we listen and feel into this intuition.
Interesting. We were taught when I was in school that we needed to fight for our rights, And I'm thinking that's a separation of sorts you were talking about, Lucas, is, you know, we were taught that it's the Big Bang Theory. All humans are this way because their science has proven it. But yet, what our stories are relegated to is the myth that they're not real, right? But yet, that story's been from the beginning where they're really starting to, quote-unquote, prove that these stories are worldwide, like you mentioned, the indigenous stories. Like, the Big Bang is not our story. It's a soft beginning creation stories. And I go back to the part about the indigenous were taught to have rights, but we're forgetting responsibilities, not only to humans, but to all life, but to Earth. And so the language to me is really, it's really have to look at it, because we're losing our responsibilities, and that's why you can't give rights, right? Only Earth can give you right, but it also gives you responsibilities, and I think we've separated ourselves with those two words.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. That made me remind of something that I was talking to you the other day about old movies and about how people are going now to the movie theaters to watch the new Avatar movie, and how people watch that and they get emotional by the portrayal of that society about that other planet where those creatures live and they are being ripped apart of their nature, of their environment, about how people are going there and destroying that all the time. And how people get emotional because of that. And you get, oh, they're killing the Na'vi and all that. But if you tell them that the same thing is happening like all the time, all around the world, like exactly now, they don't get the same emotion.
Yeah.
They don't feel like... They're not shown that, and they will like turn to you and they're really? Oh, it's probably not like that. It's probably something else is going on. So when you talk about like fighting for your rights, you were taught to fight for your rights. Which rights, right? It's certainly not the right to be in nature, because what nature is, especially here in the U.S., like, nature is property. So people own lands, people have lands, people own bodies of water. That's something that really strikes me, because like it's something that is not allowed by the Brazilian legislation, but whatever, it's different in every country. But yeah, you can own like a part of a piece of a river. You can own a lake, a part of a lake, or the whole lake. That's crazy to think about it. And so it's the right for property. It's the right. It's not what you think your rights are. It's the right that they say that you have, and that you will never be able to have at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you need to have money to have a huge property to fight for the rights to have that property. So
it's like you're actually fighting for an idea, and the idea, as has been referenced, is anthropocentrism.
Yeah.
It's like that's what we're actually really like fighting for in all these different forms that are being given to us. And supposedly we have choices. Supposedly we have democracy. You get to choose the left wing or the right wing. You know, supposedly you have this binary. But really, that's when, you know, we go back to what you're saying here, Teokasin, which is like really looking at the letters, really looking at the words, really looking at with the origins, and realizing, oh man, no, we gotta step back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta remember the earth again.
Yeah,
talking about origin, you know, you just brought up the movie Avatar. Lately I've been watching this show called Lucifer on Netflix. it's all about the devil here on earth. Like, if the devil, you know, existed, he's walking on earth, and that's what the show's about. The only reason I bring that up is that there was one part in the show that I just saw recently where he's kind of talking about the origin, you know, the Lucifer in the show kind of, you know, spoiler alert, he kind of feels like he was labeled as this bad person, and because of that, he is the devil, you know, everything about him is evil. And the show is just kind of about him, you know, realizing that he can change, you know. Yes, he was given this label as a devil, he's a fallen angel, but anyways, I'm kind of sidetracking. What I wanted to bring was the fact that he was just bringing about, like, how many different religions, cultures, you know, practices embody, like, or give him the name of, like, the devil. Like, there's different names throughout different cultures, and as we're talking about language, you know, or origins and all, it's like, we look back at, you know, what people identified as what is bad, and it's just like, all right, like, we as a community agree that doing a certain action is deemed bad, and then, you know, we kind of through religion kind of like use, like, all right, like, doing, following this type of path is, like, not good, you know. We give it words like evil, bad, etc. And so for me, it's like, you know, using language is really important to realize, because we get so boxed in with certain, like, word language. Not to sidetrack too much, but being an openly bisexual man, like, I instantly get boxed in with certain words that are used just because, like, oh, I'm bi, so then people have all these associations about me, or, like, oh yeah, you know, going back to, like, what I was saying, the show, you're the devil, so you have all these associations. It's like, no, like, the words we use, how we connotate them, how we use them, like, all are really impactful to those around us, and, you know, it affects our mentality, our perceptions about people, and instantly, like, all these associations just instantly get added. So, like, just being aware of your language and, you know, where it originally came from, how it was used, how it was changed, I think is very important to be aware of. And it's a constant learning thing, because just as gay could mean something derogatory back then, or it could mean just being happy, like, it'll change. So it's like being aware of where these origins come from and how they're being used now.
Yeah, and even our own colonial prejudice to not accept bi, you know, LGBTQ, you know, those words. I don't know all of them, right? And for me, it's like, we call a wink day in our Lakota language. It doesn't mean they're ostracized. They don't even have a label that they're more important to a society or a culture than not. So that's, you know, how much have we been colonized to say that's not normal, right? And so I think about even how much you talked about Lucifer, watching Lucifer, and Lucas talked about Avatar. You know, I know the 2010 film Avatar was taken from the Lakota people, people.
Right.
And now he's saying it, and that's outright cultural appropriation. So we have that going on in the Hudson Valley too, with people pretending to be native because they received something from a native, and therefore they're instant shamans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's sort of, they're defining who we are. In other words, they're white-splaining native people, right? And that's what I mean. That's the language. How long is this going to be allowed, or are we allowing it by forgiving them? Mm-hmm. Right? And the things that we're supposed to do that, yet the complexities of society that this society is still about colonization. There's something they won't claim because they color it with great words. You know, we're all human beings, we're all indigenous, and we don't know how to be that anymore. Well, at least they don't. But when it comes to indigenous responsibilities, where are they? Where they don't show up. You know, they do not show up if they can claim they're indigenous. Yeah. It's a hard one.
Nice.
Even for us.
Yeah.
So what do we do, you know? We can say colonization. I say colorization, colonization, all the Christianization, all these words we say, you know, there's capitalism and all that, but when it comes down to it, it's really about the earth. And present phobic language doesn't want to keep us here, wants to talk about the future or the past, and we are here. It's very, very vital that we understand our presence here on this these airwaves, and is like, are we allowed to be here as indigenous peoples? Do we have a right to be here? Or is it our responsibility to carry the messages from our ancestors for the little one that you have, you know, or the children that, that haven't been here? So do we have the right according to them? Because apparently there's no responsibility.
Well, if I may, I think the responsibility that I have for that is just to remind, or not even remind, but like to give the soil that will allow Sacha to bring up his own joy, like just like the joy that's inherent in there in communion with the earth. So if that means that, you know, we're going to be going through the forest, having days that are not like have a specific agenda in mind besides being communion, then that's my responsibility right now. And that's the joy as well that I have to do so. And so for me, like I said, I'll bring it back again to how I started a little bit of talking about composting, and like one way that using words, fancy words here, but like what we're really doing is integrating soil fertility management. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like using this, they're like, oh, well, how do we? That's a technology. Composting is a technology. Is a management. Is doing what you've mentioned earlier too. And so, like, I think at this point, I think it's taking simple steps. I think it's taking something that we can do, that we have capacity for. I think as indigenous people, we don't want to also strain ourselves, feel tired all the time, and by trying to explain things to people or anything like that. But taking those small steps that allows us to feel connected, and then can we share that with other folks? You know, I think by living with friends like Lala and Jared, and like in those small steps that I took there, the opening of the heart and the way of learning to share, but also the nuisance that come with community building in the small spaces, makes me understand that, well, the land does wants to hold us, and we just need to organize in better ways in order to like share that space that's there available, and then show the people that this is working for us. You know what I mean? And the different iterations of how that actually comes about and how that looks like. So,
It's acknowledging that it's not looking at nature from an upper view.
Right.
It's looking actually from below and at the same perspective, and realizing that you are growing together and that you might be learning with each other, actually. So and so it might sound cliche, but the first is acknowledging that nature is not something apart. It's not something apart from you. So it's something that's with you. So I was Ailton Krenak, which is a very famous indigenous leader in Brazil. He wrote that he doesn't perceive anything that's not nature. That everything is nature. That the cosmos is nature. It and that everything that he can think of, it's nature. So it starts like that. I think that's the starting point, and after that it's fighting for your real rights. Right too.
Right. We're getting down to the time again, and before we go, I just want to thank all three of you, Mike and Christian and Lucas, for being here. And you know, we talk about quite a bit about where are we going to go to? What happens to us as Native people when we're being paper genocided out here? Just this country, we live by DOB, degree of blood, right? Other countries don't have that. You know, we say we're half Native and we're quarter Native, and then all of a sudden we're not, because they're keeping track of how much Native and Natives are alive in the United States. And, you know, I'm thinking this is what's happening to Natives who are in the belly of the beast, so to speak. And I often view us as the flora, the flora within the belly. We're the ones that are keeping it alive. We're keeping things alive, and that's who we are. And so we cannot, as you say, Lucas, is that we're not separate from nature. In fact, we don't even have a word for nature, as you know. So how do we describe not being separate? You know, what is that? You know, and again, it's always about anthropocentrism. We're always putting humans in first place all the time without ever referring to where we come from, right? So we come from Earth. And a lot of us have stories that come from other places, but generally what I hear when I go across, like this is going to be heard in nearly 100 stations across North America. So about what's going on in this place, microcosm of the Hudson Valley. Mm-hmm. Because it's happening there, happening in Brazil, it's happening in Mexico, it's happening in Ecuador. So these ideas need to keep continuing. So we're going to be doing this again soon, next month, maybe with some other voices, but I welcome you back, returning. And Michael, I know you're you may or may not be here, and our friend might be leaving us here for a bit, right?
Yeah.
Nick Lucas?
Yeah, but life always brings us back.
That's right. So with that, do you get any final thoughts here?
Just gratitude. Thank you for having us here, as always. Thank you to the lands and, those that are here before us.
No, yeah, once again, like my brother said, thank you for having me. Thank you guys for opening the space. And just one final thought that you were mentioning, you know, how can we be responsible nowadays? Like, I personally, you know, don't really consider myself an advocate for all of this. Like, being brutally honest, not because I don't want to, but just because of lack of awareness and lack of, you know, educating myself, really. And even, like, after, let's say, I go out of my way, all right, I go study this and that, it's like, what are you going to do with that info? So, like, for me, like, how can we be responsible even as a listener back home? It's just, like, bringing that conversation to the table. Like, you know, I know many people that won't even have the conversation of, oh, let's talk about our ancestors or let's talk about indigenous people, you know, like, just a simple conversation, even if it lasts, like, 5 minutes, like, at least bringing that awareness. So I think this is pretty big. At least for me, I'm getting a lot out of it. So, thank you.
Yeah, so the next time I see you, I'm going to think about the tree that you saw. You see, that will never leave you. And our friend Lucas.
Obrigado. Thank you. It was really nice being here again with you, and I hope that I can come back soon.
Yeah, you will. So, whether we agree or disagree with what we said, we are all here.
Right.
We all gave our thoughts and our hearts. We came from our hearts and not so much the mental aspect of it, but we start out and we go in a good way. And we in Lakota, we have no word for goodbye. We say, Ushimalaya oyate wani wachichuelo. I want you to live, but we also say, Doksha ake wachinktelo, which means basically, I'll see you next time when I see you, right? Yeah, but thank you. And back to our engineer. And he has something set up for us, and I don't know what it is. Probably more of same. All right, Malcolm, you're on. Thank you for joining us. This is First Voices Radio. My name is Teokasin Ghost Horse.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again. Because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping. And the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence.
In restless dreams I walked alone, narrow streets of cobblestone. Beneath the halo of a street lamp, I turned my collar to the cold and damp. When my eyes were stabbed by the flash of a neon light that split the night and touched the sound of silence.
Naked light I saw.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.